Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. As I promised last night, I really want to touch base on this IRS fiasco. And there's some things I'd like to share with all of you, even though part of me thinks it's better if people don't know this, and part of me knows that people have to know this. Between 2010 and 2012, just for starters, the IRS spent $50 million on 225 conferences for their employees. Now, these conferences were done in various places. One of them was in Las Vegas, and that particular conference resulted in the resignation of the General Services Administrator. But the prices and the money spent will, like, blow your minds. They went to this conference, and they didn't even negotiate when they decided on how much they would pay for the rooms, how much they would pay for parking their cars, nothing. There was no opportunity to say, okay, we are the IRS, we're coming there for a conference. No, they paid top price, but asked for perks, personal perks, for all of the associates that were a part of these conferences. I've been in business for a very long time. I've been a manager on several different occasions. I have never done anything without taking three bids. I've never had an owner that didn't say to me, how many bids did you get, Renee? So there were no bids taken. There was no cost negotiations on anything. So really what they did is they paid the high prices and negotiated for perks, which in and of itself is referred to as a kickback. At one point in time, they paid a speaker $1,700 for a lecture called Leadership Through Art. When I read that, I was like, what? I wonder if they got out finger paints. It just blew me away. $135,000 for 15 outside speakers. And then, as maybe some of you saw on, I think on the Today Show, they said something about it. I think they said something about it on CNN, because Lois Lerner is under so much scrutiny over all of this. She is the director of IRS exempt organizations. So, $135,000 for the outside speakers, but then they made two videos. One was all of the staff learning the Cupid Shuffle, and one that they put excerpts from on television because it had a Star Trek theme, and it was pathetic. Those two videos cost them $50,000. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear big numbers, I equate them to what they mean to me. $50,000 is somebody's who's being paid fairly well yearly salary. Not everybody's. That's pretty good pay, $50,000 a year. So $50,000 for those two ridiculous videos. And the whole idea for this particular conference was continuance of professional education. Now, all this money was spent, and there were no credits given to anyone to go into their portfolios or their records or their employee jackets, whatever you want to call them. No sign-in sheets, so it obviously was not imperative that you came to the lectures. And so far, there's been no disciplinary action taken against any of the people in charge of or a part of this whole situation. And to add insult to injury, some of the planners of these conferences received cash awards. I'm like blown away by all this, and it gets worse. It's just an opportunity to name call and to blame, you know, pass the buck, and it's this one's fault and it's that one's fault, when in essence, it's everybody's fault. Everybody that has anything to do with that whole part of our government needs to be watching what's going on in the money department. I don't know about all of you, but if you've ever worked any place, it's the fiduciary duty of the person counting the money to always make everybody aware of what's going on with the money. And doesn't necessarily mean they'll be heeded, because sometimes owners or you know, real higher-ups make different choices, hopefully for the betterment of the organization, but not always, because sometimes the decisions we make are not always right. And there should be space for that. But this is blatant. This is blatant. And I know almost everybody I know, as a matter of fact, owes IRS money. And to make it worse, if you do owe them money, believe me, if you owed them $10 10 years ago, now you owe them $1,000 or better. So I found this to be heartbreaking, but I also found it to be a big part of what's going on and why things are not the way they should be. So tonight, we're going to connect the dots. Why is there so much anger in the world? Why is there so much hatred? Why is there so much struggle and frustration? Why is there so much crime? Could it be the fact that our highest levels in government, religion, education, and finance, no one is taking responsibility? Famous saying, two things you cannot avoid, taxes and death. This fiasco with IRS is, to say the least, shameful. We, the public, pay late charges, fees, penalties, interest on our late payments, compounded, doubled, and made so impossible to gain control on, we give up. So then what? I'll tell you what. Then you bully what or whoever you believe you can control. Why? We need to have power and choices over something, no matter how small or trivial. So we make comments with prejudice, we judge, we hate, we often hurt. Why? Because our personal world is out of control. We are confused and misled a lot of the time by people who are in positions to rattle our cages. Human beings were not designed to be led like cattle. We have brains, hearts, and intellect. However, when choices are not available, we can behave very badly. Our structure is rotting and soon will be gone unless we rebuild it from the bottom up. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Things will grow when we plant good deeds. Not seeds, deeds. First, we need to be proud of our actions, each and every one of us, including the ones of us that have achieved great power. So, I am, as I said, appalled by this stuff with the IRS. I find it to be hurtful. I find it to be shameful. I think that I almost feel like they should be paraded in front of all of us taxpayers who, through the years when we finally could achieve a decent paycheck, and that meant we went up another level, so more taxes came out of our paycheck. And I'm not talking about those of us that are lucky enough to make $500,000 a year. I'm talking about those people that jump from $25,000 a year up to like $45,000. Then their taxes are greater. It almost works out so they make the same amount of money. It's not right. I'm going to bring in Shelley so I quit yelling. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Rainey. Boy, this is a very volatile subject, let me tell you.
Well, and the worst part about it is I don't know really what the remedy is. It's not like a dirty room. You can't, you know, just clean it.
The bottom line is the answer to anything is information, knowledge, and talking about it, which is really what your show is all about. Getting it, you know, not the more you take a subject and you don't address it, the more it just kind of lingers out there, and everybody looks at it and shrugs their shoulders and says, well, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But what people don't understand, and what's very important to understand, is that if something is wrong, if something's happening that's wrong, that's not right, however you want to put it, it doesn't have to stand. The only reason it stands is because nobody rails against it. So the more people talk, the more that there's civil unrest, and I'm talking peaceable civil unrest. I'm not talking about, you know, people rioting and stuff like that. I'm talking about civil unrest. I'm talking about people getting petitions, signing petitions, going to their congressmen, going to the Senate, becoming proactive. We have a country that people criticize for this and for that, and then go home and watch television for 4 hours and don't do anything else. You know, they just sit back there and moan and groan about the status quo. When we, as the people of this country, it is a great country, but there's a lot wrong with it. So on one hand, I'm very patriotic and I'm very loyal to the United States, but I'm also critical of a lot of that goes on. Like you said, it seems like so many of the major agencies of this country are not doing what they're supposed to do.
You can't blame an individual, though. I know everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon and say this is all Obama's fault. Let me make something very clear. I am not saying that, nor do I believe that. Nor do I think the director of the IRS is totally to blame. It's all about all of us doing our jobs and doing them well and being trustworthy and being loyal and making it so you're able to trust us.
And for God's sake, using some common sense.
Well, I don't think common sense played into this. I'm going to have to say that I hope common sense didn't play into this. It sounds like, you know, it's like everything else that happens in our world, that proverbial snowball. And, oh, this is okay? Well, then that must be okay. Well, if that's okay, then I'm sure this is okay.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, you can put it on any level.
Exactly. When people know somewhere on some level that they shouldn't be doing something, but they rationalize why it's okay in this set of circumstances, you're kidding yourself. If you have to rationalize that something that you know deep down inside isn't okay, you know what? It isn't okay. And you can rationalize it. You can wrap some kind of a tidy little story around it. But the bottom line is, if you have that little queasy feeling in your stomach that this probably isn't the right thing to do, then guess what? It isn't the right thing to do.
But when you get the camaraderie, Shell, that's what happens. That's what I picture in a scenario like this. Everybody's having a good time. So everybody, you know, if Shelly's doing it, I can do it. Shelly's my friend, and, you know, she's doing it, so I'll do it. And then because I'm doing it, then my husband does it. And because he does it, his brother does it. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. And then later, when everybody gets caught with their drawers down, everybody points their finger at somebody else, which, of course, is what has taken place here. But
that's what I'm saying, because I've been involved in situations like that, and you probably have too, Renee. But I recognized that that's what was going on, and I didn't follow the crowd or the group. In fact, I was probably one of the only ones who didn't, and everybody was like, you know, oh, it's not a big deal. To me, it was a big deal, because I have a very strong radar when it comes to that kind of stuff, and I know that other people do too. The difference between me and you and people who live, I call it living deliberately. You know, it's like I think about things before I act on them, okay? And if when you live that way, you listen to that little voice. Not that I haven't made mistakes, but I haven't made unethical mistakes, and that's the big difference. I listen to that little voice, and I don't go with the crowd. If something's happening that I have this gut feeling it just isn't right, I remove myself from the situation. And I don't really understand why more people don't, why they do give in to that peer pressure. And they know going in, because they have that uneasy feeling, and yet they go along with it anyway.
Yes, but it all comes down to, if it feels good, do it. And you can't live your life that way, very sadly. But again, we're talking about a lot of money, you know. And every time when I look at these figures, I think to myself, all those people right now in Oklahoma, and in the past 20 years, all the tragedy that has struck our world, the United States, just the United States. I'm not even counting other countries and everything, with earthquakes and all kinds of natural disasters. Just here, that money could have rebuilt, if we did it the right way, through Habitat for Humanity or one of those kind of organizations
where some of the stuff
is donated and a lot of the labor is donated. For $135,000, we probably could have had a couple homes for two families.
That's right.
So, you know, I'm like thinking to myself, because... Yeah, I can't imagine thinking, Shelley, wouldn't you just love somebody to pay you $1,700 to give even a six-hour lecture, which I'm sure it wasn't, it doesn't give me a time, about educating everybody through art?
Give me
a freaking break. I read that and I was like, what? You know how many free lectures I've given in my life? Not that I'm anybody to be paid for the lecture, but even still, my time, my energy, and my effort, you know, $1,700? I couldn't, you know, the people that we know that have been lecturing for the last 30 years, none of them make that kind of money.
I know.
Your guy in gin, I mean, does he even ask for that kind of money when he talks?
Oh, yeah, there's lecturers that make $100,000 for a day. I know that.
Well, that blows me away. I guess it doesn't blow me away if everybody's paying for a ticket. You know what I mean?
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's
different.
Most people that are commanding that, you've got an audience out there of a couple thousand people that each paid $500 or $1,000 to see them. And then that speaker is being paid out of that because they are able to draw that. I mean, that's where the money comes from.
Yeah, that's different, though. That's different. I'm not tired. This is like when you're working at the Ritz-Carlton, and you're doing classes to teach various different hotels, the whole idea behind the Ritz-Carlton belief system, which you and I know has a lot to do with taking care of their associates first, so that their associates understand what it's like to be taken care of, so that their associates pass it on to their guests. Wonderful concept, one I truly believe in. So say they're going to give classes to open a new hotel, a new Ritz-Carlton, or maybe say other hotels come to them for classes. Those kind of lectures is what they did at these conferences. These are not lectures that are done by people that are paying for it. These people were provided with the lectures.
I can get that. Right.
Yes. So it's just, and like I said, $135,000 for, I think I said 17 lectures, but $50 million was spent since 2010 up until the beginning of this year on conferences. $50 million. Now, $50 million could have put a real head start on rebuilding Oklahoma.
That's right.
And $50 million, I have to wonder how much of that was late dues and penalty charges from the rest of us.
And that's exactly where I was going. You know, I think I shared with you recently, and I won't go into all the details, but, you know, I got audited on one of my tax returns, and they said that I owed money, and I didn't agree with it. So I got rid of about two-thirds of what they said I owed them in a letter I wrote. They agreed with some of my justification. But they're still coming back after me for a certain portion of money that I have proven that I don't owe the IRS. I've proven it three times now that I don't owe the IRS. But because of this dopey rule that exists in the IRS and because of an attorney and a judge that is reading the letter of the law and not I'm a layperson, and I understand why the law was put in place. And I even argued that I did satisfy the stipulation, and they decided against me. I mean, I'll explain it real quick so that the listeners can understand. But I had a 501c3 animal rescue. Near the end, I was working such long hours that I couldn't do, you know, I couldn't go out for grants anymore. So I started donating to it myself. I spoke to an IRS representative, and I spoke to two different accountants, and they said, well, yeah, if you donate to the money, you can use that as a tax deduction yourself. You know, it's still a donation. It doesn't matter who it comes from, you know, just because I'm part of the rescue. So that's what I did. So I started transferring money from my personal account. They were both at the same bank. So I would actually take money, transfer it from one account to the other on one day. So you would see it. And I would do the bank transfer through the bank. So you would see on my personal account, you would see transfer to, and you would see the account number of the rescue. And then on the rescue account, the same day, you would see a money coming in, and it would say transfer from, and it would show the money coming in from my personal bank account. And I was the owner of both accounts. They told me that is not considered contemporaneous receipts, because I never issued a thank you letter to myself.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to issue a thank you letter to the donor. I was like, but that satisfies the contemporaneous receipt. It shows the two accounts. It shows that it left the one account, went into the other. The amount of money matches up. Okay, and on the owner wrote, I said, let's think about this. I said, why would I issue a thank you letter to myself? I'm the owner of both accounts. And they said, well, without the thank you letter, we can't be sure that the money wasn't transferred for merchandise. I said, it was an animal rescue.
Again.
I'm going to buy a ferret from myself. They're my ferrets. Are you even thinking about what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so all these arguments, I proved that I didn't owe them the money, and they still decided against me. And as far as I'm concerned, They never had any intention of not deciding against me. I think a lot of the decisions that are made are just strictly to pull in the money, because
right.
The decision made against me makes zero sense. Nobody is using any part of the logical part of their brain. I'm sorry. And if I have anybody from IRS that's listening to this, I don't want to get in trouble, but I'm really upset about this. I think it's a ludicrous decision. I really do.
Well, I think the whole point here is, and the whole point that I brought up with the article that I wrote to read after I read the facts and the figures, is the fact that there's no honest-to-goodness leadership. And let me tell you, leadership, when it's done by an honest-to-goodness leader, they know everything that's going on everywhere. No easy task in something as big as IRS. But IRS is split into so many different departments. Each department must have a leader. And that leader should be aware of and have the integrity that's needed to make sure something like this doesn't happen, or something like what happened to you, because obviously common sense dictates what's right and what's wrong if you pay any attention whatsoever. It's just like the people, you know, it's like debtor's prison. You know, debtor's prison. I'm like, who the hell thought up debtor's prison? How is somebody supposed to pay their debt when you throw them in the slammer? And now, today, if you don't pay child support, they'll throw you in jail, just like a debtor's prison, and they will take away your driver's license. And mind you, I think every parent, whether it's the mom or the dad, should participate in the support of their children, and like some of us, for many years to come. So that, for me, is a given. However, I question the choices that they made to make that happen.
I know.
You know what I would do with a father that wasn't paying his support, Shelley? You know what I'd do? I make him work for the government, and his paycheck would come directly to his support. That would be how he got punished. Instead of throwing him in the hoosgow where it's costing us now money to take care of him, do you see?
Right.
There's nobody thinking. There's nobody paying attention.
Plus the fact is what we've talked about before, where, you know, you can't just have a one-size-fits-all penalty. Because there are some guys out there that actually kind of probably deserve to go to prison because they're just, they really are just shirking their responsibility, and they have the money and they just choose to spend it on stupid things, you know, instead of taking care of children they brought into the world. But there's other guys that are just simply struggling. They're not doing anything criminal. They're struggling like so many other people today. Those guys don't deserve to go to jail and lose their car and everything else, you know. Well, again, you have a one-size-fits-all penalty, but it doesn't fit all the circumstances. Some guys deserve it. Some guys deserve to have maybe some help, like maybe from the $50 million that was spent on conferences.
Exactly. But, again, you don't need to give them help. You need to, you know, that's like one of the grandchildren here got in trouble. Not a real big deal, but enough trouble so that we thought there should be some kind of punishment. And my daughter said, well, let's take the Xbox away from him and his phone away from him and this away from him and everything. I said, no, then he's going to drive me nuts. Every day for the next 10 days, he has a major chore that he has to do, a big chore.
Right. That's right.
That's his punishment. And
right.
I get lots of work done around the house. He gets to learn how to do certain things that he maybe didn't know how to do before. And he earns the right, instead of just sitting someplace like a lump feeling sorry for himself because his games got taken away and his phone got taken away, he gets to learn what it's like to work and pay back something that you've done wrong.
That's
it just
right.
makes
make them
so much more
just
sense to me.
Right.
Exactly. So,
and, you know,
so
that's something people don't learn today is to make amends. Half the time people don't even say I'm sorry when they realize that they've done something. You know, it's then to go. But then the people that do recognize they should say I'm sorry, then they don't do anything to make amends on top of it. So that's a great lesson.
Well, I think it's everything. I think it teaches you to have some integrity. And integrity today is missing in a lot of our masses. I think that integrity is important. You know, they use the word, the first time I heard a construction worker use the word integrity, I thought to myself, that's a strange word to use for that. We were putting new doors on hotel rooms, and he said, I would take the frame out, but I'll ruin the integrity of the wall. And I said, you're going to ruin the integrity of the wall? And I'm sitting there, and I'm mulling that over, and all of a sudden this little light bulb went on, and I said, I get it. I get what he means by the integrity. And then when he said that, integrity amongst us meant more to me. Because it means that with integrity, you stand up to things better. you're stronger and you're more capable, which is what the wall was if he left the frame in. So I loved that. That always made so much sense to me.
Yep.
But as far as far as the IRS is concerned, I have I want to put this out there, and I don't know whether anybody has any ideas, but what should be done? Is it going to be the answer to fire Lois Lerner? That doesn't make sense. Does that make sense to you?
No, of course not.
Or to punish her, or to anything. I mean, obviously, she needs, like we just said, she needs to make amends somehow. But how will they do that? And how will they make sure that everybody understands? I mean, look at the, I can't remember everybody's name that does all these kind of things, because I kind of watch these news things and then I think to myself, what a fool. Mayors and things like that that abuse their power. And I always thought to myself, how dumb. You're sitting in a place where you can really make a difference, and instead you make a choice that just makes a difference for, you know, your brother-in-law or somebody like that, and ruin everything for yourself. I don't get that.
I don't get it either.
I think
it happens so often.
All the time. It's like nobody can see the big picture.
Right.
You know, they get their eyes get locked in on this little thing instead of gazing around to see what else is going on, and that old thing that we've talked about many times, that amazing ripple effect. And I think that is often forgotten. But the ripple effect from this newest fiasco with IRS, I think, is going to be long-reaching. And I would say to everybody, if you really care and if you really want to make a difference that won't be recognized by anybody but yourself, I would write letters to IRS and just express your disappointment when you know that a good part of the money that you earn with your own two hands and your own back and your own head that we pay to IRS, and if we can't pay them all they say that they're supposed to get from us, then we pay the penalties and we pay the late charges and we pay the interest and everything. This is upsetting for all of us.
Of course.
This is one of the reasons, like I said, when we assess what's going on in the world, this IRS thing is just one of many. The night that I read about the judge that got 28 years in jail, judges, we're all taught at a very early age, are people to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that have worked their way through school, through college, through all kinds of perseverance to become a judge and sit on a bench that changes people's lives, sometimes in the thousands in a week.
That's right.
And we can't trust them? Holy God. We can't trust them.
I know. Think about
it. It just keeps breaking down our foundation, breaking it down and breaking it down and breaking it down. And pretty soon we're going to be looking around and there will be no stability because there won't be any walls.
That's right.
So if you think that it will make you feel good inside, because you won't get any recognition from anybody else, but it's what I intend to do, is write a letter to the IRS and express my opinion for what it's worth in regard to this. And the monies that were spent that can't be really accounted for, they need to pay interest on until they pay it back.
Well, think about that. Wow.
I mean, you know, and once somebody audits everything that has happened, that could be a very large sum of money. But the point is that That's what IRS would make us do. Right?
That's right.
If you and I went into business tomorrow and ran a business together and didn't do things the way they mandate for them to be done, even though we weren't doing anything illegal per se, but say we, like everybody, well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know that everybody does this, but people always talk like they do, figures out how to play the system. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know, because I don't know how to read somebody's books, because I've got about as much finance sense as my 6-year-old grandson. So, but you do hear people say, well, you can do it like this, and you can do it like that, and you can claim this, and I'm like, okay, I can't, because I don't have the foggiest idea on how you do that, but you hear people say it all the time. But if you and I started a business and we did do something like that, they would have no qualms about fining us, putting judgments against us, all of the above, right?
Right. Of course not.
So,
and on top of the interest, they put penalties.
I know. That's what I said. So, penalties.
The interest is an exorbitant amount. And then the penalties make it like you said, it's like you could just like never recover. It's like credit card debt. You know, you get to a point and you just can't pay it off.
Well, how about the exorbitant amount of money that they take out of your 401k if you need it? It's your money.
20%.
It's your money, and yet they get part of it because they've been holding it for you and using it. So instead of them paying you for using your money, you pay them for storing it.
I know. Yeah.
So, I understand all of this stuff, because this is how supposedly how we support our world up there in the upper echelons. But a lot of it is pretty hard to swallow.
And for me, it's like I've been doing some research in this area, a little dabbling here, a little dabbling there. I get very upset, though, because the more you look into it, the more you see such inconsistencies. You see hundreds of thousands of dollars in grant money being given to this and given over to that doesn't really benefit anybody. It's just like curiosity. It's like, okay, well, let's investigate this. Who's going to benefit from it? And instead of just funding all these dopey, like tests and scientific reports and stuff that really don't do any benefit for humans, why not fund programs, like you said, to build low-income housing? Let's start getting homeless people off the street. Let's start having medical care available to people that don't have insurance. I mean, why aren't we strengthening the foundation of this country instead of spending money frivolously on things that don't really help anybody except the person that's getting the grant money? And unfortunately, there's a lot of that goes on.
Well, one of the biggest, in my opinion, I don't want to call it that, but one of the biggest businesses that's going on right now are the grants that are being given to people of all ages, of all backgrounds, to go back to school. And they're lending out very large amounts of money so that schools get paid, private universities get paid and make quite a bit of money and can pay their professors and what have you. And then they get paid back at a very high interest rate. That's quite a business today. I mean,
wow.
Kaiser University, of course, is one of them, but there's the air conditioning places, there's nursing schools and everything. I get advertisements all the time, because for so long when I was right after I retired and thought I wanted to go back to work and I put my name out there on so many things, everybody wanted to give me money to go back to school. Everybody.
Wow.
And that just blew me away. And then I researched what it's all about. And sometimes it's a grant that you don't have to pay back, but a good part of it you do have to pay back, a lot of times for books and things like that. But the kids learn that they can sell their books to other people. And then the other people that buy your book for $25, they don't pay for theirs, so they get that in cash.
Wow.
So it's Yeah, it. And I want to say to you something else that you just said a little bit, and because of all the research I've done recently, and a lot of them I've mentioned on the air, there is a lot of stuff out there for people. And there are a lot of organizations, like I've mentioned 211, and I mentioned the housing thing for homeless people, and I told everybody that I would have that information. I still have that here on my folder. No one has ever called me about it or asked me about it. Of course, I realize that a homeless person doesn't have a phone or the ability to call in and listen to a Blog Talk radio show. But there are places out there, and in that respect, we're not as remiss in that part of our governmental.
Well, wait a minute. Is 211 part of the government, or is that a private? Is that part of the commercial, like state or something like that?
211 was, from everything I understand, I could not find any real background to find out who came up with the idea or anything, but it looks as though it's got a little bit of both involved. So it probably got some governmental grants. It probably got some stuff to help them get set up because they're very big now. They're very, very big now. But they take care of kids to senior citizens that are misplaced, or anybody that's having trouble with with any kind of trauma or anything. I mean, they're amazing. You should look at the website, Shel. It's very impressive. But as I said, there's also, if you get into the homeless sites, that too. There's lots of places, and I happen to know for a fact recently Jane and I said goodbye to her family member and who was being kept in a VA hospital, and then he moved to a government hospital. And they took care of him until he passed. So there are some things that we're doing. There's probably not enough because there's so many of us. And, you know, some people make choices to stay where they are, to be who they are, because that's who they're comfortable being. And, of course, we've talked about that before, too, and that's a hard fact to swallow, but it's true. Some people prefer to not have any ties or to not have any possessions, and for whatever reasons. But there are quite a few things out there now, I am somewhat proud to say. Not that I have anything to do with it, but I'm still proud that somebody has gotten us to a point where there are options out there if you need there to be some. Even the schools that they were trying to close, the special schools and everything. The truth of the matter was, all three schools that they wanted to close only had like a handful of students. That's the biggest reason why they decided they had to close. If they'd have had enough students, if enough people were taking advantage of that opportunity, they wouldn't have had to close. So a lot of what's going on is because people aren't taking advantage of those opportunities.
Right. Yeah, those are the schools that Daniel was talking about that time, right?
Yeah.
Remember that.
And when I really researched it, because I was pretty upset about it, it didn't make sense to me. And when I really researched it, I realized that that was their real decision maker, was the fact. So I guess my comment was on the website, well, why don't you condense all the kids? If you've got enough buses for three schools, put the buses together and bus the kids to one school, the one that is the most centralized, you know. I don't know what they're doing yet. I don't. Danny and I haven't talked about that, and I haven't looked anything up to find out if they've made a decision on that. But that's what made the most sense to me. But it's like everything else, you know. There are opportunities out there. But again, that's why I said what I said tonight, because when we try to figure out why people get in the frame of mind that they're in, why there's so much drug use, why there's so much alcoholism, why there's so much abuse going on in families and even in workplaces and stuff like that, is the frustration of the fact that our world is becoming increasingly more difficult to survive in.
That's right.
And that's, you know, if you are a family and you're all struggling to make ends meet, and even if everybody's doing something and it's still a struggle, that's traumatic. And then while you're doing that and you see all this wasted money, you want to say, why am I bothering? So you can, you can see how the anger wells up in people. Mind you, you know me, Shelley, I'm a believer in getting your own self out of your own mess and taking care of yourself. I believe in that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, and most people do, and most people figure out a way and you know, bubble back up to the top and get themselves floating again. Somebody throws them an inner tube and they're good to go. But it's awful when you know that it could be easier if the people calling the shots were paying closer attention. That's
right.
What makes it so frustrating.
That's right. That's right.
And I really don't know what to say other than, you know, and I don't blame any individual. Like I said before, that's ludicrous. It's a group thing. It's the world in general, and it's all about what we talk about. It's all about having a little bit of empathy and caring enough to do things a little bit differently. And
like we talked about that one night. I mean, I know police officers and nurses and doctors and my own aunt was an IRS agent. Okay, I've known school teachers that love their job. They're happy to go to work. They're very ethically minded. They go to work because they want to make a difference. So you talk to them, it's like, why did you choose to do that? Because I want to make a difference. And like when you hear that, and when you hear that they chose that profession, that means that they almost had a calling to that. But I've also met nurses and doctors and police officers that did it because somebody in their family did it, or in other words, it wasn't their passion. They didn't like the job, and they approach it with almost, like, oh, I just got to get this day over so I can collect the paycheck kind of attitude. And those are the people that don't rise to the calling of the job. So they do the bare minimum just to get through the day. They don't think ethically. They think of just how to get through the next 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever their days are, and they don't put the right type of what's the word I'm trying to think of? No, they're not doing the proper things that job would call for. You know?
Yeah, they have no dedication because they have no desire.
That's perfect. Dedication and desire, exactly. That's exactly what I was getting at. You know. But then when you get somebody who wasn't like that teacher that you told us about, you know, who, like, she collected, you know, stuffed animals from all the kids.
Yes.
And then they came the next day and everything was messed up, so the kids thought that. That was, like, incredible. Now, there's somebody who loves what they do. And because love what they're doing, they do it fully. They're fully engaged. I mean, that's a good way of putting it, okay?
Yeah.
When people enjoy what they're doing, they get fully engaged in the job. And because of that, there's ethics and quality behind what they do. But if somebody is in a job that they don't like, and they took it for whatever reason, and there could be hundreds of reasons, all right, they will never live up to the potential of that job, and they're going to cut corners because they're just trying to get through the day to collect a paycheck. And unfortunately, there are so many people that are in that set of circumstances today.
Well, and I mean, you know, like I just said, with all these schools, making these offers with the grants and everything, people are grabbing at straws because the job. Although I do believe the job market is getting better. I'm not sure why, but I think the job market is improving a little bit. But there for so long, high school graduates that weren't going to go on to college or anything. I know a lot right now because that's some of the ages of some of my grandchildren. They can get restaurant jobs, and they can get landscaping jobs, and they can get, sometimes front desk at a hotel or something like that, which is, I tried to talk a couple of them into doing that because I said you could work your way up in a hotel. But some of those other jobs are kind of like dead-end jobs because that if you start out being a landscaper, that's what you're going to be unless you end up buying your own company. So, but it is improving, I think, the job market. And I do think that there's the possibility that vocational schools and things like that, I think, are helping a lot of our young people that can't afford to do a four-year college or go into vocational schools, air conditioning and refrigeration repairmen, HVAC guys. They make a wonderful living, and you can go to these vocational schools to learn that trade, and you can learn physician's assistant, not an RN, not a registered nurse, but a physician's assistant. You can learn that job even by going to one of these vocational schools. Those are opportunities that will always be there. And, of course, technicians in laboratories and otolaryngology and blood labs and places like that for phlebotomy and what have you. Those, you know, kids can get out there right now and do things like that and make a decent living. But, you know, all those things I think are wonderful that those kind of opportunities exist, but I still have this big black cloud over me that says, you know, no matter how good you talk and how many wonderful things you think of to explain to young people, the fact still remains that they're working in a world that's pretty broken. And until we figure out a way to get it fixed, it won't matter what you do on an individual basis. Because, you know, it has to be on the whole. That'd be like saying, you know, I'm a whole person. My left arm, my left leg, my right leg, my head is all so-so. My right arm, though, is amazing. My right arm can do absolutely positively anything. But unless I'm working together with my right arm, what the hell good does it do me? And that's kind of how I feel about the world right now. If we don't understand that this is, in every sense of the word, a team effort, a worldwide team effort to bring us to a better place, we'll never get there. And it doesn't matter who you are, what you are. You know, like I said last night, if we all only talked on the phone, we'd never have any clue of what we look like. Or if we were like my favorite couple and never saw each other, it would just be about who we are to each other, not about what we look like. And that's how we have to start thinking so that we can pull everybody together and make us into the world that we're supposed to be.
Absolutely.
So get on that, will you, Shell?
Say what?
I said, so get on that, will you?
I'm working on it. No, but that, I mean, I absolutely agree with you on that, and it's, you know, and again, like I said, this show, one of the purposes of this show is to get people thinking, to get people noticing things, because a lot of times you notice things, but you can't really put your finger on it, and then we talk about it on this show, and they're like, oh, that's right, I see where they're coming from, and I knew that something about that situation didn't sit right with me or something about that right. And then the way we talk about things on the show, hopefully we can help people clarify some of those things that they noticed but didn't quite put their finger on, you know? So that's one of the reasons I love this. The other thing is it gets people thinking about solutions. because we do talk about solutions on here. And then the other part of it, we ask people for solutions. So even though we don't have all the answers yet, all right, the bottom line is we're getting people thinking. And while they're thinking about wanting a solution, they'll eventually start happening, even if it's just one person at a time changing how they feel about their particular circumstances or how they feel about any particular circumstance. And what happens is you just get more and more people thinking in a way that's decent and proactive and kind and a little bit more forgiving and a little bit more reasonable, and it rubs off.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. And that's what I truly believe in my heart. I believe that smiles beget smiles and frowns beget frowns.
Right.
And we want, you know, as we've said so many times before, we all want to be happy. We all want to be loved and love. And we all want the same things, no matter what we look like or who we are or where we come from.
Right.
There are no differences in that respect, which should unite us, which should bring us together. That one thing alone should be enough to pull us all closer together. Once we understand that it's not about all the other stuff. It just isn't. It's about how we feel about how we're supposed to feel. And once we take strength from that and gather each other together, it will get better. It will get better because it's really what we want. And there's tremendous strength in numbers. And unity, for me, has always been the only way. Even though I've always felt that I'm totally capable of standing alone, I'm not particularly fond of it. I will if I have to. But I'm the type that thinks there's strength in numbers and strength in unity. And again, you know, if we were really different, if we were, you know, if we looked at each other to eat, like some animals, you know, like if I had to watch out for you because you might eat me or I might be really hungry and eat you one night, it would be different. But that's not who we are. We don't have to protect ourselves from each other like that, or we shouldn't have to. It's not like that. We're all human beings. We all want the same things. And the more unified we become, the closer that realization will get. So I want to remind everybody that if you have a mind to do so, I would write the IRS and express your unhappiness, your discomfort, and your disappointment in regard to this event that has taken place with them. And of course now you question all the other events or anything that went on where monies that you scraped and went without to make sure got paid went to, because I believe that's our right to know that. So, but you don't need to be mean. You don't need to be, you know, you don't need to do anything other than like what Izzy teaches us, to talk to them the way they don't often talk to you that way, but that's okay. You talk to them the way you'd like them to talk to you, and let's see how far we get with that. Let's just see how far we get. And again, you know, I want to remind everybody that there's lots of opportunities out there. If you are struggling, like what we just talked about a few minutes ago, if there are new listeners and you don't know about 211, or you don't know about all the housing that is available for homeless people, you can always get on my Facebook page under Renee Brewer, or you can always email me at renee.brewer91@gmail.com, and I will help direct you to any of those kind of places. So I think that's it for tonight. Tomorrow night I have something else planned, so I hope you'll all join us. And from my heart to yours, this is Renee, and good night and God bless. And good night, Miss Shelley. Thank you for joining me again tonight. I will talk to you later.
Yes, you will, sweetheart. All right.
All right, dear.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, babe.